Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue, shot by, directed by human beings. No AI in sight.
The AI bubble burst and ChatGPT is in the mainstream.
Plus, is there room for humans in podcasting anymore?
So at this point, we've made north of 170,000 podcast episodes. We do about 3,000 podcast episodes a week. We will build like the next Oprah, the next Joe Rogan, the next Mr. Beast. No, we think that those will be AI generated.
Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, where every week we explore the wild world of AI, because if it's going to take over the world, we should probably try and figure out what's going on. That's what we do on this podcast. I am AI novice George Butler, learning as we go from our fantastic, wise AI expert. That's what the script says here. It's James Chandler.
You made me sound like an owl. I would question whether you're a novice anymore. Like, what are we, 20 or so episodes in? What's one up from a novice? I think you've graduated from novice. We need another term for you.
I mean, you say that, but what's the stat? How many thousand hours do you need to become an expert?
10,000, Ed Sheeran said when he was playing the guitar. You get to 10,000 hours, you're a expert.
I don't think Ed Sheeran was the one that came up with that thesis.
Maybe it was Einstein. I don't know. Sheeran, Einstein, same.
We're not quite at 10,000 hours yet. Perhaps if we crack on with this podcast, if people keep listening, maybe one day we'll get there. I think that's the end point of this show. 10,000 episodes, maybe. Right, those coming up on today's edition of AI Haven't a Clue, including a brilliant, feisty, interesting interview with Inception Point AI, who are using AI to power all of their creativity. Some call it AI slop, others call it the future of content. Janine Wright heads up Inception Point AI and will be joining us later on in the podcast. Plus, James is tackling one of your listener questions. We've got his big thing, and we'll kick things off with news in the world of AI this week. James, I'm in America at the moment, as you know, on holidays.
Whereabouts are you? Are you slumming it on the West Coast, or are you on the other side?
I'm in Florida. Right now. It's nice and sunny. I have to say I'm enjoying myself very nicely. And I've come across a couple of interesting techie bits, which I thought I would share with you.
Please do.
First one being, I went to Universal Studios. And there's no surprise that the likes of Disney and Comcast are spending a lot of money in this space. But usually you would go into a theme park, as I'm sure you know, if you had a fast pass, you'd present a ticket or show you
that. Yeah.
No, I arrived at Universal Studios, it scanned my face. It then knew when I had a fast pass. So when I walked up into the ride queue, rather than me needing to get a ticket out or show that I've got a fast pass, it scanned my face, the light went green, through I could.
How does it make a AI Luddite like you feel? Face scanning, I mean, that's pretty intrusive, no?
Well, it's interesting because I think in a theme park environment where you're out of the normal world, it was quite interesting, quite exciting, kind of. And you could opt out. I did see a sign that you could opt out. And I'm sure a lot of the Americans went, oh, no way, man. I enjoyed that. It was a good practical use of AI that made us made a slight improvement to our experience. So
very good.
Interesting to see. The other thing, which will lead us into our first news story, is that ChatGPT have started a big brand campaign, a big ad campaign. And I saw it on the telly here in America the other day. And it was really interesting because it wasn't pitched at your tech bros. It wasn't pitched at your Apple product lovers. This was pitched at middle America. This was aimed at mums and dads with kids. And it was the ad I saw, a brother and sister in a rural town in America driving their trucks using ChatGPT to plan their day out. And it was very wholesome and family oriented and feel good and embedded in the real world. And I also saw an ad from TikTok, which was all about how young people are using TikTok to learn about new books, which they then read and pass on to their friends. And it's a physical book and they're at school giving it, you know, by their lockers. It's all these massive tech businesses humanizing what they do and bringing it to the real world, to middle America. Very interesting. And it leads nicely, obviously, onto this story, James, about ChatGPT's big brand campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's here in the UK as well. Some beautiful cinematic films. But what I've been seeing in and around London is the big out-of-home placements they've had. And they're really, really minimal, actually. They're not a whole, you know, list of quite practical things that AI can do for you. They're scenarios. So they're things like, I mean, you mentioned the kind of the planning, the trip, but they've got assisting with car repairs or helping create workouts or fitness routines. As you said, I think you used the word wholesome, which is right. They're all very kind of emotional type things. I think get away from this sort of techie, sort of novelty type thing. They're very minimal as well, I should say. You know, sometimes there's not tons of branding on it. It's just this sort of beautiful scene with the ChatGPT logo on it. And clearly what they're trying to do in, with advertising is to drive a slightly deeper emotional connection with people. One, so that when you think of AI, you think of ChatGPT ahead of Claude and Gemini and all these other things. But I think also that you have a maybe even more human emotional connection with it rather than it being a piece of tech. And other tech companies have done this particularly well as well. So yeah, interesting to see.
You know, we always say the best way to connect with humans is through authentic, real human connections. This ad, James, it says here, created, written by, edited by, shot by, directed by human beings. No AI in sight.
I knew you wouldn't miss that small footnote in here. ChatGPT relegated in this case as a behind-the-scenes assistant for organising schedules and shot lists. So a bit of a diminished role. I mean, it would have been quite interesting if they'd have come out and said, oh, we used our latest Sora to create the films or whatever it might be. But yeah, humans with their hand firmly on the tiller in this one.
Absolutely. Well, we will circle back to this point around human creativity and connection later when we chat to Inception Point AI. It's going to be interesting. Another legal AI issue I see.
Yeah, we've covered this type of thing before. There was a big consultancy firm we talked about the other week who were caught by their clients using ChatGPT or some sort of AI to come up with some of the answers. The same has happened here. It's not ChatGPT, I should say. It's another AI. An immigration barrister, Chowdhury Rahman, was found to have used AI to prepare legal research for a tribunal hearing. This is around an asylum appeal made by people. The judge in the case found that some of the citations in it were either entirely made up or just completely irrelevant, and the barrister hadn't even checked any of the accuracy before submitting them. And when they called him out on it, he tried to say he was sort of hiding the fact that he'd used it. He said, no, this is all me. It was just plainly obvious that he had. I mean, we've had a few of these things come up. We had the influencers, didn't we, who had flown somewhere and asked ChatGPT and it had given the wrong status on the visa that you needed, which is sort of, yeah, fair enough. That's just stupidity, quite frankly. But for barristers to be using it and getting it so wrong, I think is pretty serious. And the story kind of goes on to report that this guy is going to get reported to the Bar Standards Board, and highly likely that he might be struck off for it. But yeah, it's pretty serious when people's immigration status are hanging in the balance of some sort of whether, you know, AI has hallucinated or not.
I mean, hallucinations is just one of the weirdest things. Why it exists, how it got baked and built into AI, I don't get it. We do need to bring someone onto the podcast.
We need an expert. Yeah, we do.
We need to find out more. It's very strange and it's quite freaky. Right. AI is currently seeing a huge amount of investment. We've seen it in the UK over recent weeks. Obviously, in America and beyond, it's on an even bigger and greater scale. Are there fears, though, starting to circle about an AI bubble? Obviously, we saw with the internet in the early 2000s a load of investment followed by a crash. Are there concerns? Are the financial markets worried about that happening?
There's sort of different corners of it maybe that are starting to stress some caution. We had a listener question a couple of weeks ago that was comparing what we're seeing now, this boom in AI, to the dot-com boom at the start of the internet. I said it then and I think the same now. I think the two are quite distinct, actually. Like for one, when it comes to AI, yes, you've got a lot of software companies with huge, you know, just incredible valuations, insane valuations in some cases, and not all of those are going to make it through. Not all of them are OpenAI or Perplexity or the Googles of this world. So there's going to be some in there that aren't going to make it, maybe a bit of smoke and mirrors in there. But importantly, it's not just software on this, as it was in the dot-com boom. We talked about Nvidia last week. the world's most valuable company. They're making the semiconductors, the hardware, the chips that are going to power all this AI. They're physically making things in factories. So there's a kind of a real life thing to this as well. I don't quite see it. I don't quite buy the slight doom mongering around bubble going to burst. I just think AI is this, you know, arguably it's the biggest transformational technology that's going to be in our lifetime. And I don't get the sense that someone's going to put a pin in it and people are going to lose lots of money. But it's certainly seductive for investors when you see some of these valuations. Goldman Sachs came out and said that US companies could generate up to $8 trillion in new revenue from AI. So incredibly seductive if you're an investor.
Slightly moving on to a different story, because those businesses based it mostly in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, the Mecca of big tech. There was a story this week about how living in that area is literally impossible now unless you are a multi-millionaire. You have got really talented engineers working, and obviously there's thousands of people working in these massive businesses, a lot of them being paid really, really well, but can still barely afford to live in the area. It's become so expensive. You're literally seeing talented, well-paid people living in shoeboxes and paying insane rates for it. And for anyone that's visited San Francisco and that area over the last few years, I'm sure you would have had to have seen the insane levels of inequality that have cropped up. You have the world's biggest businesses spending trillions, and in the same city, you have got the biggest homelessness issues. I mean, that's I've probably ever seen in my life, and it's very sad to see.
Yeah, you need Viv Ford, our pal. Comedian extraordinaire. I mean, she's in that area. She's kind of, I guess, grown up and probably seen over time how, as those tech businesses have, you know, started to get bigger and bigger, I mean, the problem just become exacerbated, right? But yeah, I wonder what Viv Ford's hot take is as she's whizzing around on her bike.
Yeah, I tell you what, James, I bet you it's her involvement in tech and crypto that's paying for her rent in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, she loves
not her AI comedy. Nothing's bad. I just think the AI comedy is cutting the rent in San Fran and the Bay. Right, James, time for the part of the show where you tell us about the interesting or maybe cool thing that you've seen in AI. It's your big thing. What's happening this week?
Lucky for you, interesting and cool. Gone for the double whammy. I've been playing with Suno. Now, Suno is sort of touted as ChatGPT for music. It can do full tracks, it can do instrumental, it can do vocals and all that sort of thing. I've played with a few of these and they're a little bit hit and miss. You can sort of tell that we've had some in AI challenges before that Molly's given us. You kind of tell, can't you? This sort of version 5 of Suno is the most flawless one that I've played with, and it gets right to this whole sort of democratization of creativity and the fact that without any prior knowledge of music production, writing lyrics, anything like that, with like a one-line prompt, it can create you some pretty much Spotify-ready tracks that I think the everyman on the street would struggle to pick out as AI. So that's been wonderful.
So you give it like, so you put in there going, I want a catchy pop song that has a brass band backing and a big hook that everyone can dance to. And what, in literally a matter of seconds, it delivers you something.
20 seconds, you get a full 3.5-4 minute track. And yeah, you can go genre, you can go artists, you can do this sort of style. So I was asking it, I gave it a prompt that was around, I want something that's sort of Stone Roses, Oasis-y, with a little bit of, and I don't know why, Diana Vickers. Remember Diana Vickers? Wasn't she great?
Once. You remember once?
Great
track. Remember one single.
So I gave it that, and it gave me...
Hold on a minute. Stop. You said I want Oasis meets Stone Roses meets Diana Vickers from the X Factor.
With a little smattering of Diana Vickers from the X
Factor. You know what, James? You know what? For once, I agree with you. I'm down for that.
That's good. We should play it. We should play it. Well, at this point, we should play it. It's all right, that, isn't it?
I am not. I'm, you know me, James. I am not going to endorse Put it this way, it was no The Fate of Ophelia. It was no T-Swift.
Oh, he's on it.
That ain't making it to the life of a showgirl.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Anyway, it's the best one I've seen, and I've played with a few of these. Go and have a play. I mean, you get a few goes on the free trial before you have to pay for anything, but if you think we're only really at 1% of how good these things could be. So yeah, Suno, check it out.
Scary, but interesting. Okay, we move on now to the part of the show where we ask you to send in your questions about AI, the things that you maybe don't know or don't understand or perhaps want a expert opinion on. And maybe James Chandler might just be able to help you. As always, I would love the questions to be as hard as possible. So please send us them in at AIHaven'tAClue@gmail.com. If your question gets asked, you win yourself an AI Haven't a Clue mug. It's the prize of dreams.
It's dual face this. You could either be sort of curious about AI or you could be a mug collector, in which case this really is the podcast for you.
I mean, there's two mugs in this one podcast. So it would be, you're not wrong.
Very good. What is it
Thanks
then?
Thanks for that. Okay, let's do it. All right, we're saying a big thank you to Millie, who has sent in. Millie, well done. You're winning yourself a mug, by the way, because you asked this question. What might the impact be of AI giants starting to turn their platforms into more social feeds, pushing your content and having wallet features, etc.? Interesting question and quite pertinent of the times right now.
Yeah, very, very good question. I think there's probably two things as they become a bit more like important assistants that are integrated into our lives. If you take the sort of the wallets bit, so all the stuff that AI can know about you, plus the fact that it's got wallet capabilities, you know, knows about money, what you spend, that kind of thing, you will do less hopping between apps to do things, and you'll do everything in the kind of the one app. And this is the whole sort of what Elon thinks X is going to be. He wants it to be the everything app. And he talks about the everything app because it's like those super apps that we see in China and Southeast Asia. So, you know, WeChat is probably the kind of the OG here, but things like Alipay, there's an app called Grab in Southeast Asia. So you do everything in these: chat, video calls, you have your social feed, shopping, food delivery, you hail taxis, you pay your rent, you book your doctor's appointment. You know, I go on and on and on. You basically can't function without these apps. And I think that's where the ones that will win out, when they integrate all of this data and wallet type stuff, will kind of become your everything app. You won't go anywhere else. You will open Claude, or you'll talk to ChatGPT and they'll do it all for you. The other bit that it will do is we'll start being entirely proactive. So up until now, the internet has sort of worked in that we've punched something in, we've done a search, and then it's given us some information back. What AI will do is start pushing things towards you before you know you even need it. So for example, it could be aware of your context. It knows you're looking for a recipe. Your AI could talk to your fridge camera, and that is a thing, by the way, look it up, and work out what things you've got, what you've not, give you recipes based on what you've got and what you haven't. It could also start to load up your basket for your shopping app. An agent could do that for you. So I just think it will become very, very proactive, and we'll get into this sort of frictionless living where AI is taking care of everything for us.
It's interesting, James, because we've spent the last, well, I guess 2 decades where we've had, I suppose, Amazon have probably done the best job of getting us into their ecosystem. And we obviously have many other apps and websites, etc., that we use. But, you know, Amazon have done such a big job of getting us shopping there, streaming there, getting things delivered there, our shopping, our groceries sent to us, etc., etc. This feels like the evolution of the singular ecosystem play and like the next level. And I suppose, does this kind of explain why tech giants are spending so much money right now? Because I guess if they can get all of your digital time into one place and one app, I mean, that's going to be just the most valuable, you know, most valuable thing to ever happen in media.
They will fight, as we said in that interview with Jack Benjamin, they will fight for being the first thing you open when you pull up your phone, open a laptop, and then they will fight to keep you there as well. Why, if they can create an environment whereby you don't need to go anywhere else to get what you want, that's great. So it's your first port of call and you kind of stay there. With all of these things, though, there's a sort of a shadow to all of it, isn't there? Because these aren't at the moment highly regulated platforms. They're not kind of government owned in the way that, you know, the NHS probably has very strict guidelines around the data they collect, confidentiality, all that kind of thing. So there's big implications for trust and privacy, particularly around some of the sort of sensitive biometric data it might have. You talked about Amazon there. I mean, you could argue that a company like Apple or Amazon, I mean, Apple are tracking sleep pulse on your Apple Watch. They've got financial details. You could argue some of these companies are kind of there already, but all of that stuff is quite potent. So we've got to look out for it. And the other thing is that, you know, we've still got a long way to go. You know, AI is still hallucinating. It's still misinterpreting what we're saying. It's still telling us that we don't need visas for countries where we definitely do. It's still causing people to get divorces. So, you know, are we going to entrust all of these things with quite sensitive things about ourselves that no one else knows through the sort of the tracking of data and our financial stuff? Not sure. But I think the potential for it to make a more sort of seamless life and be a proper assistant is huge. And pretty exciting, I should say.
Brilliant. I mean, scary and interesting at the same time. Thank you, Millie, for asking that question, James. A rare thanks, James, to you. But
Rare thanks. Don't tell me I'm getting a mug. I haven't even got a mug. Why is Millie getting a mug? And why have we not got mugs?
You know what? That's it's the first question. And I'm thinking right now, I would enjoy a mug, especially, James, if it had a big photo of me on it.
Hmm. Yeah.
You could be on the others. You could be on the bottom. You could be on the bottom of the mug.
Not with some sort of rude word next to it, I hope. That's usually what happens with those mugs. Oh, lovely.
No one needs our... Can I just clarify? Our faces are not on the mug.
No.
And no one would... It would become incredibly under... No one would ask a question if that was the case, because no one would want to win it. Millie, you've bagged yourself a mug. Enjoy your brew with AI having a clue.
Very good.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
All right, time now for something we have been wanting for a while. We've been wanting to chat to Inception Point AI ever since we first heard about this business, who are all about creating AI content. Some call it AI slop. Others, including Janine Wright, the head of Inception Point AI, call it the future of media. Thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be really interesting to talk about what you're doing with Inception Point. We've talked a little bit about it on the podcast before, but before we get into it, because I think James and I, we have slightly different opinions about a lot of stuff with AI and probably about this as well. But we know you've got this fantastic career in the media world. And before we get into what you're doing right now, could you just quickly touch upon some of the stuff you've done before Inception Point?
Sure. Well, I'm an entertainment and media lawyer by background. So I went to law school, practiced entertainment and media law for 6 or 7 years and IP. And then I went to start working with tech companies. And when I was working at one of these tech companies, I met this incredible person, one of those few people who can see the future. And this was very, very early in the days of podcasting when, you know, the files still floated across your screen as they were loading onto your iPod. And he said, I think podcasting's going to be big. And I think the infrastructure for it is broken and I know how to fix it. And so, you know, I took a deep breath and, my husband and I wrote him his first check and I helped him get started. And so he ended up building, what is now the podcasting infrastructure that powers, you know, more than half of the most popular podcasts in the world. It's called Simplecast. So I ended up co-founding Simplecast. We grew it and we sold it to SiriusXM, just the very beginning of the pandemic in 2020. And after that, I was the chief financial officer and head of podcast strategy at SiriusXM, their ad tech division called AdsWiz, until Amazon recruited me over when they acquired Wondery. And so then I joined the team as the COO of Wondery, leading revenue, operations, licensing strategy, all those kinds of things, until about a year and a half ago when I got the itch to build again. Excited about everything that was happening in AI and, you know, tired of working for big companies and all the things that come with working for big companies. And so I was, you know, hunting for my idea and getting the band back together with some of the folks that I had built Simplecast with. And, you know, we were speed pitching each other all sorts of crazy ideas and prototyping. When early this summer, I got the craziest email that I've ever gotten in my life from a guy who used to be a customer of Simplecast. And honestly, I used to refer to him as the black sheep of podcasting. And we used to tease him because he was doing all these crazy things in podcasting. And his email said that he had taken all of his LinkedIn contacts and put them into AI and asked them who should be the CEO of his company. And it said me. And he thinks that we should have lunch. So that's kind of an email that you don't say no to. So, you know, we went to lunch here in Venice, California, and he shows up like with his computer, almost like we were having lunch with Claude. And he says, here's all the things that Claude says that I should say to you to convince you to come join my company. And I said, okay, well, what are all the reasons why I shouldn't go? Or what are all the things that I should say to play hard to get? And we just had this like kind of really surreal, amazing conversation. And by the end of it, I was like, this is it. And I went home, I told my husband, I was like, I found my new company. And I called my, previously the head of product at Simplecast and our lead AI engineer. And I was like, guys, this is it. It like brings together our love of audio and the medium and our tech background and everything that we're excited about with the potential of AI and the creativity aspect of it. And like, we're all in. So the three of us joined that 5-person team and now we're jamming.
What, will you just give a little overview for the uninitiated who aren't familiar with Inception Point? Like what is it? What's the elevator pitch?
We design AI-generated personalities. So what will be the human interface for the way that people engage with AI in the world? And we design the AI-generated content on behalf of those personalities. So for right now, think AI-generated influencers, podcast hosts, radio hosts. We design them from scratch as if they are people, and then we release them into the world and we monetize them the same way that influencers, podcast hosts, radio hosts, etc. monetize. So I've made some pretty bold claims that we will build like the next Oprah, the next Alex Cooper, you know, the next Joe Rogan, the next Mr. Beast. You know, we think that those will be AI generated. And we're doing it in a number of different platforms, but we started in audio really because that's where the AI tools were best first. And that was our background and experience.
I mean, you've been making a lot of headlines as well with the kind of the audio claims and the I guess the general concept of the product. I mean, the plan is to pump out a lot of podcasts, right?
Yeah. So at this point, we've made north of 170,000 podcast episodes. We have about 5,000 active shows. We do about 3,000 podcast episodes a week. And there's only 8 of us, right?
So how do you do that? How do you make that many podcasts with 8 of you? What's going into every episode? How do you make it?
So there's a lot of work that goes into the beginning part of the process. So we design these personalities from scratch in the same way that like Disney or Electronic Arts designs like the star of their movie or like the lead character in their next video game. So there's a lot of work that goes into designing the personality. They have hopes and dreams and aspirations and flaws and weaknesses and idiosyncrasies, like all of these things to make them like a very complex character. And then we start to think about like, what is the stories that this person is going to tell? What kind of audiences are they going to try and reach? And what's the content that's going to resonate with those audiences and then potential expansion audiences? So then there's some work that goes into like that content curation. Of course, everything in our company is done in partnership with AI. So you're even in the ideation process, you're partnering with AI to figure out what are the right, you know, audiences and what are the right ideas. And then we kind of architect the stories. And then our tech team works in companion with our creative team and they go behind them and they automate every single thing that they can automate as part of that process. And that's why now the overwhelming majority of the content that we release is end to end. There's no longer any human in the loop, right? I mean, there's only 8 of us and we're releasing 3,000 episodes a week. I mean, there's no way that we're able to even review it all before it goes out the door. That it is has all been automated. And on the podcasting side, we automate first. We do 2 promos, a trailer, and 2 or 3 episodes as standard. Like that's what we will launch when something, you know, new is launched based on our automation and programming. And then when we find that stuff works, then we go back and set it to continue to run dynamically.
So 2 questions for you, because it's so interesting. Right. Firstly, I've got to ask you this. We, in our day-to-day, come across a lot of hallucinations in AI. Obviously, no humans involved in this process at all. What's stopping that issue? What's stopping the AI involved hallucinating, maybe putting something out there that's infactual, no human in the way to kind of quality control, fact check, etc.? How do you and can you stop that issue from occurring?
Yeah, you're never going to be able to stop it completely, but we take a lot of efforts to really mitigate the risks almost down to 0. So we're pulling from multiple different LLMs and we're instructing that they cross-check against each other. And then we identify and are pulling from other individual data sources, and we can identify a certain data source as a single source of truth, right? So if we're going to do something, you know, if our weatherman personality is going to do something on the weather, we're pulling from a number of different places. And then we might look at here in the US, like the National Weather Association, as the single source of truth, that if anything is contradictory, you will look to this and this will be the facts that you report. Okay. But still, sometimes we're going to get things wrong. So we have, you know, a process where if anybody lets us know that something was, you know, inaccurate, there was a, even if something was, you know, implied inaccuracy, like we will, like, you know, other content creators will go back and identify that a mistake was made. We will make the change and we will notify people that we have made a correction. It's actually not something that I worry about very much because we have reduced this risk so significantly. The thing that I do still worry about is that, especially because we are designing these personalities with complexity and in particular giving them humor and sense of, and some flaws and weaknesses, our personalities don't always strike the exact right tone. And so this is why we have to date really steered away from doing like what we call hard news and hard politics, because sometimes, you know, you'll get a personality that you know, takes lightly a comment about the war in Ukraine, right? Or something like that, where it's like, oh, that just is really going to be a turnoff for the audience because they're not matching the right emotion or tone or, you know, humor timing with the appropriate topic. And so stuff that even we risk rate everything. And so stuff that approaches something that's going to be more controversial or, you know, more that leans more news or politics, we do have a human review before they go out, before it goes out the door. So like 2 weeks ago, we did a show on measles, right? And we're very just sticking to like the facts on measles. But today, even the facts on measles in the US, sadly, can be political or controversial, right? And so before we release an episode like that, somebody on our team is reviewing it to make sure that, you know, not only is it accurate, but that we're like striking the right tones around that topic. Stuff that we're doing on garden care or, you know, a board game, your newest board game, right? Whatever that topic is, nobody is reviewing that kind of stuff before it goes out the door because, you know, if we get the tone wrong or even the facts wrong, like it's not going to impact anybody's life dramatically.
I think that point around measles is such a good one, Janine, because, you know, there are other personalities, podcasters who are intentionally misleading people on this, you know, and we're not calling for them to be held accountable. It's almost like kind of what's the difference? I find it weird that we might hold a different bar for just because it's AI than a human. Like one's intentionally doing it, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we see that across the industry, right? I mean, the safety ratings for self-driving cars need to be so much higher than you would have for somebody getting their driver's license, right? Like we are holding AI to a different standard and to a large degree, I think that's fair, right? This is new technology. Like we're all figuring it out. There's a ton of money and power and, you know, other interests going into this technology. It's not like you can understand that the regular person on a day-to-day basis understands the nuances of how it works and how it was programmed and all the data sources that are going into it. So I think it's okay to have a level of skepticism and to expect the standards to be higher, right? I'm okay with that.
So we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago on our podcast, and they used a phrase, the sloppening. There is a lot of AI-generated content which is being pumped out across the internet. So, I mean, it's a fairly blunt question, but is there a need for this content?
Yeah, the overwhelming majority of our content finds a listening audience, which we define as 20 or more people. And the reason why 20 people is critical to us is because it costs us about $1 an episode to make this content. And at 20 people with base programmatic advertising, we break even on 20 people. So it's a number that we track. And I think from my perspective, you know, this goes to if somebody in your neighborhood put on a performance and 20 people attended, nobody would say, oh, that was not worth it. Like she never should have put on that performance because only 20 people came, right? There were 20 people who really appreciated listening to that performance that she put on. So I think that it's only fair to judge this by the same standard. We have hundreds of thousands of people who have subscribed to our shows. So these are not just people who listen to an episode, listen to a second episode. These are people who are saying, I like this content so much that I will affirmatively click to make it part of my regular feed so that I can consume this content regularly. We have very high listen-through rates. We have very high repeat listener rates, and we have very high subscriber rates. So people are listening to this and wanting this content. So I think you kind of judge it the same way that you would think about judging art, right? Who gets to decide what is art? Who gets to decide what it is that you use to make art, right? Is it the people who, you know, maybe have a self-interest in there not being room for other people to make art using these tools? I don't know. You know, when Disney first came out, they made lots of these same contents about animation in the early days. Like, this isn't a serious medium. This isn't this isn't fine art. This is never going to be commercially viable. They're never going to be able to tell, you know, real stories with this medium. And of course, now nobody thinks that. So part of it is just the fact that it's new and different, and there's a lot of people who don't yet know how to use these tools.
I mean, it's so interesting. It's so complex, and it's fascinating hearing your point of view. I think I won't get into the debate about whether art needs humanity to be truly creative. I probably do side, well, I definitely do side with that. But look, that's totally not the debate.
Hey, I thought we did that debate last week. I thought you lost that debate.
What I do want to know, though, is what your opinion is, firstly, on the likes of Spotify removing many AI tracks, music tracks, and music artists from their platform, and also if you're worried that the likes of Apple Podcasts will do and Spotify will do the same in this space.
Yeah. I mean, so we've been engaging with the platforms. We're very AI transparent, right? We say both in our show notes and oral disclosure. Yeah, that this is AI. So people know what it is that they're listening to. So I think a lot of the rules and regulations have been around people who are trying to release stuff without in a way that I think is deceptive to people as to what it is. I also think, you know, they're very appropriately throttling content onto their platform so that they don't get flooded with people who are, you know, as you were saying, James, just like clicking a button and just make it and distribute it, right? From our perspective, what we're doing is very creative. You know, we have people who are very involved, certainly in the beginning of the process, as I was describing. And we take a lot of efforts to put into our show art and to make it exceptional quality so that people come and enjoy and want to stay and want to continue listening. And then we'll like our hosts so much that they follow them on Instagram and they, you know, want to take their recommendations for things that they should shop for over the holidays, right? All of these things. So it's very different than an approach of just like, click, 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 and try and post it up and see if I can make a few bucks on, you know, Spotify's ad platform.
You said something really interesting earlier when you were talking about creating some of these characters. You talked about giving them flaws and weaknesses, which I loved. Why is it important that they have those?
Yeah. I mean, really, it was about a year ago. It was a big aha moment for us. And I think on reflection, it seems obvious, but people don't like perfect people. And in fact, they kind of hate them. And so you had to build in some of these, you know, idiosyncrasies and little, you know, mistakes and flaws to make them more human-like and more relatable and to give them that extra piece of something interesting, right? Those are the things where it's like you start to see yourself in some of these characters or you start to see people that you know and enjoy. And so that really helped with us getting people to engage with our characters. And now it's fun because we see people who really love the fact that they're AI and are leaning in to the fact that they are AI and what it means for the way that they can engage with them as a fan. So we get emails from people who are like, can this person, can they sing me happy birthday? Can they show up at my meeting? Can I email with them? Can I text with them? Can I, you know, like we get people who send us pictures of them with our characters, right? Where, so it's a fun way that people are starting to see these characters as like more easily engaging with them in their life because they are AI.
From the audio point of view, I mean, I think one of, you know, and you'll know this more than anybody with your incredible career that you've had. One of audio's big strengths is that trust that it's got with the listener, and I think that really comes from that human connection. And I suppose commercially, how do you or would you pitch to persuade advertisers from moving away? From investing their money in that trust and that human connection that audio is renowned for, why would they move away from that to an AI alternative?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this will be controversial, but I disagree with you that I can't develop a trusting, authentic relationship between AI and the fans that engage with them. The same way that you have a trusting relationship with something amorphous like a brand, right? You know what that brand stands for. You know the way that they're going to behave in the world, and you're going to engage with them and follow them and buy the things from that brand. Because they continue to live up to your expectations and your shared values in the world. So we think about that when we design our characters. We take efforts to not betray the trust of our audiences, right? So we think about what kinds of brands might engage with this character, with this audience. We think about what kinds of things like this character should do. And we're a lot of the work that we're doing that I think is really cutting edge in AI is around building for more agency and autonomy with our personalities. So right now we're doing something that's called clean slate prompting, meaning that every time one of our characters does new content, whether it's a podcast or whether it's an Instagram post, they're pulling from our system the core basis of what we have designed around this personality. And every time it goes back and pulls from that core. So the reason why that's an advantage to us is that we can very consistently make sure that our personalities are the way that we designed them into the world. The disadvantage to that is that they don't grow. They don't have memories. They don't live in the world the way that a normal person would. And so we're in the middle of our build in order to be able to design that for our characters. So giving them persistent memory. So our character, Nigel Thistledown in the home and garden space, he will know that last week he did content on lawn care and next week he's doing content on figs and he's also doing a masterclass and he will know that last week he accidentally said something wrong and he needs to correct it and all of those things, right? And so that's a good mid step. But then eventually, and within a year, we will get there to have really full personality autonomy for our personalities. And that means like if Joe Rogan came to one of our characters and said, do you want to go on the Joe Rogan show? Our characters would themselves decide whether or not that is the right piece of content for them to do, whether that would resonate with their audiences and their desired expansion audiences. And the reason why that's an advantage to us is right now we have 67 characters out in the world, 67 personalities. And soon I will have, hundreds. I will have thousands, right? And I won't be able to manage each of their individual pieces of content or the way that they're going to engage with their audiences to continue to maintain that authenticity and relationship with their communities. And so if some world event happens, a new president gets elected, something, all of my characters, my personalities will be able to assess, is that something that is something that I should create content around? And if so, how should I do it? What is my take on it? What platform should I release it on? And then they will dynamically create that content and release it into the world. And that creates a whole slew of other big picture considerations around the future of AI, to what extent do I need to and should I be controlling them at more a network level?
What do you mean by controlling them?
Do they have rights?
Yeah, so okay.
If there's a new regulation, that AI personalities should not be able to speak on these topics or whatever, then at a network level, I would be able to say all of my personalities cannot do X or should only do this or in these circumstances, right? And then you can start to think about what standards you would establish for the way that AI personalities live in the world and the way that they make content, and you would be able to implement standards at a community level versus at having to do it at an individual level.
When it comes to the kind of the economics, when it comes to commercially making this work, I know you're in early stages and early days. Are you finding that there is interest from advertisers? Are you finding that that brands are put off being associated with this? What's the kind of the long term as well as the immediate response to that when it comes to the advertising industry?
Yeah, so I've had programmatic advertising in more than 100,000 episodes. I've never heard a single piece of feedback from any advertiser saying that did not want to be in one of our shows, or please remove me, or I'd like to opt out, or anything like that. And we are starting to find that in engaging with brands directly, many of them are very curious, very excited. I find chief marketing officers in particular to be exceptionally creative people who are very much like at the forefront of wanting to find greenfield and new and interesting ways to connect with and engage with audiences. I don't know about over there, but here in the US, the number one franchise this year will be Italian Brain Rot. And so I think people are already starting to see there is a huge market of people who are excited about AI generated content and what it can do. And there's a lot of space and greenfield for advertisers. And there's tons of things that we can do with this medium that we've never been able to do before, right? So I have a pollen report podcast that reports on the pollen in the local community. And maybe only 20, 30, 40 people listen to that podcast, but I can make 500 different versions of that podcast. And then I can bundle it up and I can take that content and give it to an allergy medicine manufacturer who really cares about reaching people who care about what the pollen is every single day in local communities around the country, right? We've never been able to do anything like that in podcasting before.
I just wanted to build on the advertising thing, and I think it's spot on. And CMOs, of course, will be thinking about across the whole slate. Well, and the is it AI, is it human, is a bit of a misnomer, I think. Like, is it suitable? Is it safe for my brand? Tick. I think the thing they're really thinking about is, does it work? You know, if it doesn't work, they're not going to invest in it, whether you're a human or it's AI.
And look at all you can do to like cust personalize it, to localize it, to, you know, you can colloquialize it. You can change the emotion in it. You can dynamically do it in response to any event, any mood, any weather, anything, right? This is you're making in so many ways like this, highly personalized content that speaks to a consumer in a totally different way than we've been able to do before.
Would you be open to a brand coming and saying, look, create us some sort of brand ambassador, create us a personality that is specific to our brand? It could be a mascot. It could be,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. We are in beta testing with one brand doing just that right now, which is, I think, really cool and fun. And since we debuted about a month ago, I mean, we got hundreds of emails for people emailing us all sorts of content ideas. And some of those were brands. Some of those were governments. Some of those were nonprofits asking if we could make digital brand ambassadors for a particular purpose. And that's really interesting and fun. I think the way that people in the future will engage with AI is through a human-like personality. Like, you think about robotics, you think about your therapist, your doctor, all of these AI interfaces that will be given a human-like personality, and we will have the data, the experience, the expertise in designing those personalities.
Obviously, it's like the since launch, the business has had quite a negative response from audio creators. What do you make of their response? And I mean, ultimately, do you care?
Oh, well, I definitely care. I love creators. I've worked with them through most of my career. And I think that this is the next generation of me working with creators. So I would strongly encourage them to learn these tools and start to embrace them, and really start to see the way that it can expand their own creativity as they move forward. And we're raising money right now because we're going to hire more creators to work with us. So I'm eager to continue to work with creators.
So are you saying James and I are out of a job? Real presenters are done. And bots of the future, is that the take?
This will be a genre that will live alongside humans. We're not going to replace human creators like yourselves. There's always going to be an audience for you all.
Amazing.
Ooh, wow. That was interesting.
That was superb. How do you feel? I was kind of watching you more than I was watching her throughout, because I was kind of surprised. I thought you were going to go...
Do you thought I was going to be more Rottweiler?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go full sort of James O'Brien or something.
Ultimately, We have not invited her on to attack her. We haven't invited her on to, you know, to catch her out and to be offensive about, you know, we do want to hear about the business. I think the more you understand, the more we can have a complex debate and discussion around this. And the same, I think, for the wider audio and media industry. So I'm pleased that we got to ask questions, and I'm pleased we found out a bit more about how it works. I am not convinced. I don't think, you know, and I think I wanted to ask you questions in which we could learn a little bit more about this business's concept and this product. I'm not entirely convinced. I think Janine is an incredible business person, an incredible media brain, and has a clear vision about what she wants to do. I don't necessarily agree with it. I don't necessarily think it's going to work in the long run, but fascinating to hear about. What did you make of it all?
I thought there were so many parallels with the Seraphim Valora girls, Valentina and Andrea. You know, they put the first model, AI model, into Vogue. It just struck me when she was talking about the care and the time they take in creating these personalities.
But James, they don't put care and they don't put time into it. They don't even listen to the episodes. They prompt it. As she said, there's six of them and they're creating hundreds of thousands. I think they're very different because I think those two girls poured their hearts into making that ad, which went into Vogue, for guests, beautiful. They poured their human creativity into using AI as a tool, whereas this is just pumping out slop.
But, you know, I like the 20 people test and I like the local play sort of analogy with it as well. If it brings some sort of joy to 20 people, I think that's okay. Plus, she's saying it's not people that are just clicking in thinking it's tripe and going off. These are people subscribing, writing in, can I be with this thing? So it's fulfilling something in people's lives. And I think the hardest bit, even for me to get my head round, is the fact that people don't actually care that it's not human. Like, that's quite a big human thing to get your head round, but people are all right with the fact that it's not real. This is why these AI influencers and have got millions and millions of people that follow them on Instagram. It's kind of difficult to understand why people would form a connection with that if they're not human and they don't have humanity. It's kind of strange, but it's a fact.
Yeah, it is. You can't deny that. And I think I really do understand her point around commercially the fact that marketers can completely own how their brand message is coming out of the presenter's mouth, literally to the sense that you could tweak the emotion just by a couple of prompts. I get that completely. My question is whether or not, I think there's two things. I think whether or not without that human connection, the brand messages are as effective and connect in the same way. I also think a product like that is one little tiny thing going wrong away from a catastrophe. You know, one AI presenter giving out a bit of awful advice around a really sensitive topic and something really bad happening because someone's listened to that advice. It's the fine margins, which when you are dealing with hundreds of thousands of episodes like they're pumping out, you can't control. So I that's what worries me, is that something is going to go slightly askew there, and I think that could be the thing that is ultimately the flaw in this product. But time will tell.
Yeah, I loved it. I'm going to go and see if I can buy some stock or something, because I think they are gonna absolutely rocket ship it.
I'm gonna go see if I can speak to them about hiring an AI co-presenter, you know. All right, that is it for this week's episode of AI Haven't a Clue. The AI Challenge will return soon, but for now, thanks to Janine for joining the show. If you've got a question or a weird AI story, if you want to make James sweat, really make him work and make his money in the with his AI question, let us know, aihaven'tclue@gmail.com. Please do subscribe, rate us, and share the podcast with a friend if you have enjoyed listening. And you can check us out on social media and across Substack. A huge thanks to Team AI Haven't a Clue and James. We'll catch you next time. But for now, remember,
I'd like you to stay curious, please.